And with that, we're live.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And we're here today to talk about supers, superhero media, superhero RPGs, and various other stuff and things. And we have a cornucopia of cool people here to talk about it with us. We've got Steve Kenson. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, buddy. I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, always good to have you on the show. For those of you who aren't aware, Steve has written Mutants and Masterminds, Icons, so many other things. Always a pleasure to have you on, Steve. Dan Hauser, who is the line artist for Icons, among many other distinctions. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well.
All right. And Chris, let me make sure I get your last name right. How do you say that?
Just Bedell.
Bedell. Okay, I was going to slaughter it. You are a game developer from Greater Than Games.
I am. That's true.
And as I'm guessing most of my listeners know, you guys put out a wildly popular card game called Sentinels of the Multiverse, and its various video game components and add-ons and whatnot. And so, great to have you, and we're going to be talking about, I understand you and Green Ronin are putting together a Kickstarter next week.
Yeah, it's pretty fun stuff.
All right, cool. Well, kind of our loose back-of-the-envelope format here is in the show is we talk about comics and TV and movies in the first half, and then I awkwardly segue somewhere in the middle to where we talk about Kickstarters. So,
speaking of awkward segues, hi to Christopher McLaughlin, who's also here.
Hey, Christopher McLaughlin. I was saving him for the second Chris because we have two Chris's.
Two long-haired Christophers. It's like we're having a convention or something.
Who are also working together on a different project.
Indeed. On our top secret project.
We are recording now, guys, so be careful what you say.
Oh, no.
Don't worry, their laser cannon will never work.
You haven't seen the new specs yet.
They laughed at university.
Chris McLaughlin is I guess we just call you a frequent co-host or panelist at this point because you're on pretty much every podcast, Chris. So pleased to have you. If my listeners don't know who you are, they haven't been listening. So thanks for joining. And of course, Mr. Walt Rebillard of Hazard Studios, my frequent co-host, is here. How you doing, Walt?
Pretty good, although I don't think I could pull off a superhero cowl or a luchador mask or whatever. So. Pretty sad.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of very forgiving costumes in superhero land. I mean, there's going to be something you could do.
I could pull off a ninja costume pretty well, but I mean, everything else just, I don't know, I look dumpy.
Jumpsuit henchman?
I haven't auditioned for that one yet, but maybe that's on the bucket list.
The Monarch's henchman. Everyone looks good in that costume.
Right on. Talking about games?
Talking about games, comics, everything else. Hey, I had a list I wrote down of stuff. The Thor trailer. Who liked the Thor trailer?
It was fantastic.
Yay. Yay, Thor trailer.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very here for that.
Yeah. The very odd thing is my wife is in love with Planet Hulk. So she hasn't seen the trailer yet. And I don't want to disappoint her because I don't know if it's leading to a Hulk movie, but rumors are that it's leading to a Hulk CGI movie where it's basically Planet Hulk and World War Hulk is like the possible phase four. But I'm like, I don't know. These are all rumors at this point. But
yeah, I'd be surprised. I figure it's more likely that all the Planet Hulk stuff will just happen in Thor Ragnarok, and then that will wrap it up nicely. I mean, they've got to get something back for Infinity, so it's unlikely.
Yeah, but maybe that's part of the Infinity War thing. I mean, who would be somebody that nobody would want to see those heroes fight and Thanos could take over? I mean, sure. That would be... I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. The trailer looked amazing. It was funny. It was fast-paced.
No, like, when I saw the Thor trailer, my initial reaction was, this is the best Thor movie I've ever seen. Just that 90-second trailer was the best Thor movie I've ever seen. So
that's how I felt about the actual that Logan trailer with the Johnny Cash song. That was the best Wolverine movie I'd ever seen. That 90 seconds right there.
I still haven't seen Logan yet. I work nights, and last weekend was WrestleMania, and I'm a wrestling fan, so I haven't been to the movies in a bit. But it's on my list.
It's exactly like Grumpy Old Men, but with Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart,
which is better. Like,
right.
Let's be honest.
Miserably better, yeah.
Right. I would watch those two just about anything.
Yeah. So yeah, but the Thor trailer, that, how do you raise the stakes in a trailer? You blow up Asgard and the hammer in the first 30 seconds. Yep. So.
And you have Led Zeppelin. It's like, man, how much did that cost them?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm pretty sure Marvel Studios can afford it.
Oh, at this point, yeah.
The thing that was pretty
we're not employees for them right now.
Go ahead, Chris.
The thing I liked about the Thor trailer was the kind of disparate that the Thor movies have always been like kind of a high epic fantasy feel, and Asgard is this like, you know, like elvish sort of place. And but the rest of space, as we've seen in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, is more junky. It's more Millennium Falcons and like freighters that are pieced together with garish paint schemes. And so it's nice to see that this movie say, okay, well, you know, Asgardians are space, but the rest of space looks like this, and this is what we're doing for space stuff. And Asgard is getting blown up. And I think that I hope they're doing this in a direction to kind of say, space stuff feels like Guardians of the Galaxy, Earth stuff feels like Earth, and mythology stuff feels more in the Doctor Strange direction. I mean, I feel like we're getting kind of a consolidation based on the most recent IPs. Now, who knows what'll actually happen in the movie, but...
Yeah. It also totally plays into the, you know, way Thor in space was in the comics. You know, I mean, Marvel Comics always had, you know, weird stuff like Asgardian gods, you know, in outer space fighting aliens. So
fighting hillbilly pirates.
Right.
I mean, there's with this movie, with the theme of this movie and the look of this movie, we might get a Beta Ray Bill.
Oh man, that would be so awesome. He's got to get that hammer somehow.
Played by Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, all right, let's stop now.
Sorry, that's my go-to joke. Yeah, I'm sad that MTV has kind of fallen off actually playing music, but it almost seems like it's freed up people to do music videos in other ways, like
wait,
for trailers. Huh?
MTV still exists?
They're doing a Fear Factor reboot.
Oh, well.
Hooray.
That's got to happen somewhere.
Somebody must eat those livestock penises, and... they have a show for it, and they just turn out reality stars, so that's good.
I would actually argue that doesn't actually have to happen somewhere.
Not according to the livestock wiener lobby. They pretty much
burn people. They have great influence.
You know, I was in a punk band for a while called the Livestock Wiener Lobby. That's a story for another time, though. Hey, speaking of reboots, I understand that Mystery Science Theater 3000 has recently been rebooted. Chris McLaughlin, can you confirm or deny that report?
It has indeed. I've seen 12 of the 14 new episodes, and I am for the most part absolutely delighted with it so far.
Perfect. Do you have any highlights or lowlights you'd tell us about?
Well, the great thing about it is that the writing staff for each episode has 15, 16 people writing for each episode.
Wow.
And the one thing that I've noticed compared to all the other the old show and all the other offshoots like Riff Tracks and Cinematic Titanic and all that is you get a lot more references and you get a lot more insanely brilliant references. So the riffing itself is a lot steadier and it's more off the wall and on the whole, it tends to be more steady funny. You find yourself laughing more frequently through the course of a show. The things that the main thing is it definitely brings the funny. Jonah Ray is fabulous, and the two gentlemen that are taking over for Tom and Crow, Baron Vaughn and Hampton Yunt, and that's how Wikipedia says he pronounces his last name. He's a local guy from the DC area, so I apologize if Wikipedia has led me astray. These guys are absolutely brilliant. I mean, they have this knack for picking up on a character or a monster or an inanimate object, developing a voice for it, and just keeping a running gag going for like an hour and a half. And it just, it consistently keeps me in stitches. Really, 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 really good stuff there. About the only thing I could really complain about is, you know, those of us who grew up on the original show, we were used to seeing it, you know, run like 90s cable length. They would run for like an hour 40. Well, these have been edited for like modern cable standards. So they run like an hour 30. So like everything else, like the movies, the host segments, everything else has been pretty brutally pruned down. You know, you don't really get a sense for who these characters are, which to me was a great level of extra funny from the original show. You know, it was more, it seemed to be more organic. You know, these characters had more time to breathe and develop. There were things that were funny just because Dr. Forrester and Frank were saying them, for instance. And you just, I mean, everybody is just, it's get to the jokes. It's get to the jokes. You don't really have that sense of these people being characters on top of it all. But, you know, if it runs an hour and a half and I'm just laughing my butt off for an hour and 22 minutes of that, how in the world could I possibly really complain about that? You know, but the only really true letdown with me was I was blown away by the list of like geek celebrities are on this show. And so far, just only one of them has really worked at all. Now, admittedly, the one that worked spectacularly. I mean, it was fall out of the chair funny. We're not supposed to go out spoilers till midnight tonight, but I'll say that, you know, this person is a horrible doctor who's known for singing and blogging. You know, yeah. And it just absolutely, probably the funniest thing I have ever seen him do is this one incredibly funny host segment. So watch them. You'll love them. So far I can really recommend the 12th show because it's like a Manos level insanity film. I haven't seen the last two yet, but absolutely, just except the first one was a bit rough, but all of them are worth your time. But the 12th one so far, just Manos level funny.
All right, cool. I'll have to check that out when it goes. It's on Netflix tonight, right?
Midnight, 12:01 Eastern time, shows up on Netflix. Mm.
All right, cool.
Well, Christopher, I have a question for you, actually.
Yes.
Is it weird the way the puppets move now?
Oh, with the three. Oh, with three people operating each puppet. Yeah, seeing Tom's arms work.
Right. He's supposed to like flail around kind of pointlessly, and moves much more intentionally now. I feel like.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, in the first episode, you know, there was a little bit of that, you know, like the scene in The Exorcist when you notice Linda Blair's head is going all the way around, you know, seeing the arms, the robot's arms work in a non-ironic fashion. It took a little bit of getting used to, but they've had some great comedy payoffs with that so far.
Oh, cool. I look forward to seeing that. We had a new guest just join us, the way sometimes happens in the Banff. We had two new guests just join us. Oh, my God. We play baseball right now, guys. we had Jacob Blackman join us. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello. I don't mean to take away from your other guests.
Oh, no. It's all good. More the merrier. Jacob does a lot of work in RPG art, specifically for Rogue Genius Games, where he does the Iconic Legends and Superpower Legends for the Instant Masterminds and Icons, kind of reskinning of Marvel characters. So, Jacob, glad to have you. And also, Adrian Smith just joined us from across the pond. How you doing, Nate?
Hello. Not too bad, thank you.
All right. Wow, we have so many people on here. This is crazy. All right. So, we talked about Mystery Science Theater 3000. We talked about the Thor trailer. Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman. Steve, what do you got to say about that?
It's awesome, and people should read it while they can, because apparently Greg just announced that he's leaving the book, which is a pity, because I've really been enjoying his work. But he really has a great take on the character, and his story has been really enjoyable. So it's one of the Rebirth books I'm enjoying a lot.
Okay, cool. Chris, are you in it by chance, too? I think you're a lot of DC stuff.
Yeah, and Dan Abnett's Aquaman is also shockingly good.
Yeah, I've been reading. We've had Edna on the podcast a few times. I've been reading that as well. Yeah, it's a good Aquaman comic. What are the chances?
turns out.
McLaughlin, I know you're kind of a big DC head. What do you think? Since we usually talk Marvel, I figured I should let you weigh in on this.
Well, you're probably asking this question at the wrong time, because the most recent issue that I read was a blatant nerfing of Kyle Rayner, and that's been sort of an outstanding. This has sort of been an outstanding issue between me and DC for many, 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 many years, because to me, DC is built on, my love of DC is built on three tentpoles: the Justice Society, which is coming back, so all love there; the new Flash title, which is one of the few titles that post New 52 was never really terrible and actually tried to do some new and interesting things with that reboot format. But man, you know, this obsession with the blandest leading character in the history of blandness. I mean, White Wonder Bread thinks Hal Jordan is dull. And this fact that, you know, nobody can be as cool as Hal to try to distract us from his blandness, it just grates after a while. And, you know, the nerfing of Kyle Rayner is a sore point in what otherwise has been a magnificent run for Robert Venditti as writer of that title, because the great conceit of Venditti's writing is that Hal is not all he's cracked up to be. So it just seemed really forced and really corporate, and just, you know, I mean, if for sales reasons you have to put all the Green Lanterns in one book, I kind of understand that, but just going out of your way to destroy the things that set them apart from each other, because to me the setup for having like 87 human Green Lanterns was never stronger than when, you know, Kyle was a White Lantern and Guy was a Red Lantern. You know, that way you didn't have 87 guys with the same power. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I'm hoping it will come back from that, and the things that I absolutely love about Venditti's writing, this whole setup with trying to make this the marriage between the Greens and the Sinestro Corps work, stuff like that is fabulous. And really, I don't think my other thing is I don't think enough people know how good the Green Lanterns title is, because this thing started off with what is obviously one of my main gripes: too many human Green Lanterns, and it's done such a great job of developing Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz's characters. And also expanding the mythos of the Green Lantern lore. It's been a great, great balance between the human element and adding something to this now 50-year-old mythology, stuff like the Phantom Ring and things like that. So really, I think it's a very, very underrated book.
All right. Well, cool. Aid and Jacob, you guys are kind of late to the party. Are you guys reading anything, watching anything you want to talk about?
Well, you already touched on Aquaman. I, with one of my favorite artists, Stefan Sedgwick, about to pick that up in June, I believe. I've been catching up on Aquaman titles. I recently picked up a couple of trade paperbacks for the Rebirth, and I read those last night, all of them, and they are wonderful. I have never enjoyed Aquaman this much. I've read some in the past, but they were some issues from the past, but they were very bland. You know, not much to it. But these are incredibly well written.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, if I can ask a question for you guys that are reading this current book of Aquaman, I mean, I'm a fan of Dan Abnett's. You know, he's a friend of the show and all that, so I'm predisposed to like it. But in the past, Aquaman has either been like doofy, bland, or, you know, I never shared Peter David's obsession with Atlantean politics. I couldn't get into that run of it. And the whole Geoff Johns take of, you know, where Aquaman has short man's disease and it's just a constant reminder of Aquaman's not lame, that was a little bit too much in my face for me. You know, for some of us who haven't really cared much for any previous takes on Aquaman, could you guys give us a feel for like what Abnett is doing?
Well, I think one of the more interesting things that especially you can especially do with a character like Aquaman is touch on the world political situation. He's a king. He's a king of a nation that goes around the globe, which is nothing. No one else can claim that. So the fact that you know he can have all these political, personal relationships with all these different countries. Those are some interesting stories to tell. Other than just, you know, beating up supervillain of the week, you can actually build on what the world is like with that kind of story.
Yeah, I've been collecting Rebirth for a bit. I haven't started reading the Aquaman stuff. I kind of kept it to Superman, Justice League, and Batman. But the couple of issues that I read of the Aquaman I liked, it was when I got to Captain Marvel / Shazam and the new Shazam, which I thoroughly dislike. The new Billy Batson is just a jerk. Like I'm like, it's like he's not just Jason Todd. He's Jason Todd with Superman's powers and none of the wisdom of Solomon. It's
good
like
Lord.
It's like, yeah, imagine Jason Todd is Shazam and that's what they did to him. And now I'm like, they burned they burned to the ground my favorite character. And they won't change it. The only happy news I had was watching real Lobo kill stupid Lobo. And they fired the guy who thought stupid Lobo was the good Lobo. I'm changing everything up. I'm like, you have no idea why people like Lobo. And then when the real Lobo killed him, I was like, I am so happy right now. I will continue. I'll buy the old issues just to savor the moment that all this builds up to Real Lobo killing him. Because yeah, I am original Simon Bisley, Keith Giffen. It's a stupid character with a stupid premise in stupid space. And oh no, now he's super slick and a fashionista for some reason, and has a goatee. Oh, kill him, please.
Apparently, DC heard your criticisms because there is a blatant and obvious mockery of New Lobo in a recent issue of Green Lantern.
Yes, and Real Lobo has killed him and was like, "What are you talking about? I'm not dead. By the way, I have a deal with Hell. You can't kill me. They don't want me there. They don't want me in heaven. They don't want me in the afterlife, so I can't be killed." I was like, "Yes," and then he kills him.
Now you're talking about Lobo, played by Claude Akins in that spinoff from BJ and
Bear,
right?
Sheriff Lobo, of course.
My favorite episode of that was episode 13, Lobo the Roller, Disco Karate Caper. That was some good 70s television, let me say.
Mike, there's going to come a time in my life where I don't know any of my home phone numbers. I don't know my home address, and probably my mother and father's faces will have vanished. But I still know every word of the Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo theme song.
Our Sheriff Lobo. Yeah, hey, children. That was a show about it was a spinoff of a show about a trucker and his monkey.
And well, really, trucker monkey. I'm ready to go to pilot right now. Trucker monkey, I'm sold. I'm running that.
Why is that still not a show? I have no idea. Other than chimps are notoriously evil, like, and are hard to train to do anything not evil. So maybe that's it.
And they say this is the golden age of television. We have a dearth of trucker monkey shows.
Hey, Netflix, if you're listening, and I know you're not, but if you are, bring back BJ and the Bear.
There's a lot of folks work at Netflix. Should be surprised.
Fall Guy. Like, if you brought, okay, imagine a show where these guys are still doing their stuff. Like, Fall Guy and BJ and the Bear. The ape is just, now he's just really old and tired. And Greg Evigan has got, like, a support pillow. And he's really huge and lost a leg from diabetes because he's been eating trucker food. And he's still driving that same old truck. And Sheriff Lobo is now Governor Lobo, and he's thoroughly corrupted. Like, these would be great, like, update shows.
You're making me sad describing this, Dan.
I don't know whether to be upset or laudatory the fact that you're describing a Sheriff Lobo, BJ and the Bear shared universe here.
Yeah, well, whatchamacallit, like, that whole, everything that producer made, even Battlestar, you could just, like, make it all one universe. Mm. It's like, oh, my goodness. Lobo, McCloud would be there on his horse. Well, his horse would probably be dead by now.
Well, you've obviously put a lot of thought into this. So
it's just sometimes when I think of BJ and the Bear, I'm like, man, I wish that all, like, Fall Guy and MacGyver and, like, all of them lived in a shared universe. Maybe there's a game for that. I'm sure Spectrum Games has a game for it, is what I'm thinking now. I'm like, yeah, Spectrum's probably already made that, like, 80s TV action hero role-playing game.
Hey, Twisting Chopsticks, Aid, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm okay, apart from rampant hay fever, which is fantastic.
So what are you reading or watching these days? Do you want to talk about... Iron Fist or something else?
What, the TV series?
Yeah.
Finished that, done that, gone.
What'd you think about that?
Yeah, it's okay. it's all right.
A real reaction. That's my opinion as well. I thought the kung fu was, like, yeah. I was like, how did you get a guy who choreographed, like, I don't know, a fifth grade movie about kung fu, maybe? Like, a fifth grader's like, this is our fight. And then all of a sudden, whoa. And then nothing. It was like, it wasn't very mystical kung fu.
So yeah, I lasted the full 10 episodes, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
So apart from Luke Cage, that's the only one that I've managed to do 10 episodes of. So
I have to say, I did enjoy it. I would have liked some better fight choreography, but it didn't ruin the show for me.
That's true, too. Yeah.
That was a problem for me.
I'm actually a Iron Fist fan, so I don't know. Again, if it's not wearing the cool high collar with the grinks, you know, it's not Iron Fist, I'm afraid.
Right.
So, next season. Remember, that's how they do it with these. You don't get the costume until the season after.
Even just a green tracksuit like he has been wearing in the recent series would be pretty rocking. But no, nothing. It's like, get him some bloody green, for Christ's sake.
And put on them ballet slippers that you wear in the comics.
Exactly. That's what
we
want
to
see.
The thing for me is that we live in an era in which we've all seen Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan on screen, which are two very different people. Two very different like fighting styles and acting styles. But we've seen those people. We've seen a human being move like water. And then they get this actor who's like, I'm the immortal Iron Fist. I'm like, no, you're not. You can't. You're not a martial artist. You can't move like a martial artist.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen Keanu Reeves as Neo and John Wick, and that's definitely not what I see when I see Iron Fist.
Right.
And you seem like a nice enough guy, but you're not the Iron Fist of the Kunlun. That's not true.
Right. Like, I don't buy it. And I get that, like, oh, well, you know, you can only do so much with a real human actor. But I've seen amazing things with a real human actor. I mean, I saw
Daredevil season one and season two, the hallway fight.
Well, and the Drunken Master fight scene, that guy was amazing. Like, that was the best part, in my opinion, that was the best part, hands down, of Iron Fist, was the Drunken Master guy. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't gotten there, whatever. Something to look forward to. But the rest of it, the fighting, was forgettable at best.
Well, hey, speaking about things that are not forgettable, Steve, what's coming up for Icons in the near future?
Let's see. We just did Dan's big Rise of the Phalanx adventure book as the first giant size Icons book. I'm working on, right now, I'm working on a revision of Theron Vretz's Sins of the Past adventure with Theron. He's done a revised and expanded version of the adventure, and we're in the process of doing development right now. Dan's working on concept art to do new art for it.
Yep.
So that's it's been one of the most popular adventures for the game, so I'm really looking forward to doing a new sort of new and improved version of it. Then things start to get a little more vague because I've got a bunch of other little projects going on, and it's going to just kind of be a race to see which one gets done first.
There's the not so little project, but it's all in the vague, hazy future.
Yeah, you know,
after the adventure stuff.
So, I'm working on a bunch of other Icon stuff too, but it's going to be a matter of what if it gets done first.
Yeah.
So that's
what we're doing.
That's a super vague announcement.
So, you
know, pretty much where it's at.
So Chris, not McLaughlin, the other Chris. I want to both say, I'm sorry, and I'm not sorry at the same time. I'm sorry. I'm the guy on Board Game Geek who played the beta version of Sentinels and hated it, and I thoroughly just went off on the game because there were no instructions in the game. So I was like, we were getting our ass beat over and over. I was like, this game is not fun. I'm like, I don't want to play the superhero equivalent of, the superhero equivalent of of that game where you're solving a virus.
Pandemic.
I was like, I don't want to play the super version of Pandemic. This is horrible. What the hell is this? Why? And then I played it again, the actual game, after when the actual game came out after the Kickstarter. And I love that game. So,
oh, good.
I want to say so every current thing, my friends have bought all the expansions. I haven't had time to go out and get everything. But every time I've played it since then, now that I know that you're not supposed to face certain villains with one hero.
Any villain with one hero.
Yeah, or two heroes. It was two heroes, and we were just like, we're getting destroyed.
Yeah. No, actually, the core rule book in the initial edition of Sentinels: The Multiverse on page 8, I want to say, but that part could be faulty. That could be my memory. Mentions that it is a 3-5 hero game, but it doesn't say it expressly enough.
No. Yes. That was pointed out to me that there is a line. I'm like, this book that we had and this copy we had was from the Gen Con Gaming Library. We played it at a gaming hoopla, and I was like, hey, this is a really cool idea. I'm like, I can't. This is awesome. Why did I know? Oh. And now we're getting beat. Now I'm always getting beat. Now I hate this game. And I'm like, this game is. Then they were like, did you play the actual? I'm like, no. And I tried it. I'm like, I reluctantly withdraw all of my opinions.
glad we could believe that.
I'm not sorry that I had a bad experience with the beta, because I was like, ah, this is garbage. I'm like, well, no, it wasn't. It was that the rules were kind of goofy in the edition I had, and then I was like, oh, well, now I know how to play it, and now it's fun. So, yes. I was like, man, and I was like, yeah, this game is doo-doo, and I'm like, no, it's not. Ah, crap. So, for me to you, I actually really enjoy the game. I love the artwork, and I was like so enthused about the new stuff. So,
yeah,
no, and I was heard you guys are working with Green Run. I'm like, ah, ha, ha, this is gonna be so cool. I'll back that.
Well, hey Dan, while we're talking about superheroes and gaming, do you want to talk about that? The biggest release you guys have had at Infinitum here recently is that new big adventure you just released.
Oh, Rise of the Phalanx. Yeah,
can talk about that.
Sure, I can go into it just a little bit. It's a combination of four modules and a side quest that I created for Icons over the past since Icons started, I think. It's the revised edition of Nova Flight of the Nova One, which kind of has its some ties to the Gangbusters module. And then it goes on to become when I started, I was like, I want to do a series that was also a series you could play individually, and in any order that you wanted to, and you can, with the exception of probably the last episode. If you play the last episode first, the rest of them are going to be kind of
weird,
anticlimactic. Well, understand, yeah, a little weird, but you can play them pretty much in any order or play them by themselves. You don't need to play them all in a row, but the fun for our playtest group was playing them all in a row. And Steve created, has just his touch for editing and streamlining everything that we had made this new book just fantastic. And if you're interested in seeing an evolution of an artist's craft from one style to another, there's no better chance than to get this book and watch as it goes from Flight of the Nova One to Reign of Chaos, which is the last module in the series. There's a little, I added some rules. There's some side rules in there, like for good and bad media, which was kind of my take on the karma system from Phase Rip. So it was like good press and bad press, and there were ways to earn it in each chapter of one of the modules. And you could continue using that, which I liked, or you could even take it from that module and start it from the beginning. But that's probably my most proud thing, was creating a system that I thought was not like just utility, but it could be used pretty much in any Icons game to keep players thoughtful of whether their deeds are good or bad, or so you could actually keep a good track of whatever genre you're trying to play in Icons. So if you're trying to play, like, I want an Iron Age series, well, then your good press and bad press would be, like, you know, quite different. But I that was kind of fun. But yeah, Steve did an amazing job with layout and with the editing. It's a beautiful book, and it's just so well, like all of my, because it was so long between releases, he kept everything, like, he had everything like a showrunner would have on a season of a TV show. He's like, nope, hey Dan, you said this and this one and this and this one, which one's right? I'm like, oh my goodness, you're right. And then he fixed it all, so it all is like a perfect, like, Lego set for Icons, which you can dump out on the floor and make however you want, which is also good. But that has always been with Steve's philosophy of Icons. It should be like that with everything that we do, is that you can shake it all out and build whatever you want, really, but here's what we did with it. So I appreciate everyone who's picked it up. And if you haven't, if you're GM, it's really, really, really useful for GMs. It's got lots of villains in it. It's got lots of rules for other games you might play. And then there's a side adventure called The Nemesis Crisis, which shows you how to do, essentially, Secret Wars. And you can peel off all of the stuff that I did and create your own Secret Wars, which is also compatible with all the hero packs that I did. Oh, and for people who backed the last hero pack, I have enough heroes now. It'll be finished soon. I just have to get the artwork finished and the layout, but I've also got Theron's project, and then when that's completed, I'll begin layout on the new hero pack. So that's what's going on. Oh, and there's a secret project with Green Hornet I can't talk about, but was confirmed that I'm still doing, so I'm doing cartwheels over that. But it's a secret, so
you can't talk about it.
Until it's official. But I think everyone will be impressed when they see it. So that's good.
Do we want to talk about any of the Mutants and Masterminds stuff coming up before we segue over to the Greater Than Games project? Or just kind of go hand in hand?
Well, Chris, yeah, I can see that's really kind of the next immediate thing as far as that goes. You know, we're really excited about it. So we're as folks have no doubt heard, where Greener Than and Greater Than are collaborating to do a Sentinels of Earth Prime card game that's going to basically combine the characters and the setting from the Earth Prime universe for Mutants and Masterminds with the Sentinels of the Multiverse card game mechanics. And so we're really excited about the prospect of seeing the two working together.
Chief Earth Prime fanboy, and Chris McLaughlin's here, so I'm so happy this is becoming a thing that I can't possibly hate it, because it will be so good. I can't wait. It's gonna be so good. I can't wait.
We're gonna specifically write it so that you get beat all the time and you can never win.
I don't care. So I don't care at all, because I'll get to play in the Earth Prime universe in a card game based on Sentinels of the Multiverse, so it'll be good. I don't care. Yeah. Oh man, I'm so jazzed. Sorry.
we want people to be jazzed about it.
Yeah, we hope so, yeah.
I'm such a nerdy fanboy about everything to do with Earth Prime, and I just I'm sorry. It's one of my favorite fakey universes.
Thank you.
And one of my favorite built superhero universes.
Both Aid Smith and Chris McLaughlin here on this podcast are regular contributors to the Atlas of Earth Prime, which came out.
Oh, yes.
Actually, I'm not in the Atlas.
I thought you were. I'm sorry.
No, I got a thank you from Scott Binney, because he used a couple of things I had mentioned in previous modules in his Canada write up. But other than that, getting that thank you, I wasn't offered a spot in the Atlas. So it for better or for worse, probably for better, I'm not in there anywhere.
But Chris did write the, in my opinion, one of the greatest modules for Mutants and Masterminds ever. Time of Crisis. If you don't have that,
kind of you, sir.
Man, you inspired me to write Rise of the Phalanx. Like, there's so much good stuff in that for GMs to just look at. Like, even if you never run it, buy it anyway. It is a guide for showing you how to build good adventures for any superhero.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you, sir.
Ben, how can you not like a monkey?
And it comes full circle, back to BJ and the Bear.
Exactly. although there's also Nazis. It's got everything. I'm telling you, it's got everything.
Well, hey, Chris from Greater Than Games, as opposed to Chris from Green Ronin, can you talk a little bit about the process of, how would we say, designing or reskinning Sentinels to work with Earth Prime?
So I would not call it reskinning, because it is compatible with Sentinels of the Multiverse, and there is no crossover. All of the decks are going to be like brand new characters, not new to the world. Obviously, they were created by fantastic, talented, wonderful people, and they have their own stories and they're doing their own thing. And all I'm here to do is apply mechanics to them and make them work and make them feel like themselves. And I've had a few people be like, "Wait a minute, some of the characters like Johnny Rocket and like the Raven have characters that also exist in the Sentinels of the Multiverse game that are similar, that are like, isn't Johnny Rocket and Tachyon going to be similar? Isn't the Raven and the Wraith going to be similar? Things like that." And it's like, in my opinion, no. Like, if I can't come up with two completely different deck mechanics for how a speedster can work, then like what good am I? So both Johnny Rocket and Tachyon are speedsters, and yet their decks work really differently. They have different core mechanics, and yet those mechanics still evoke that sort of gameplay feeling. And it has actually been really fun for me, because in the first set of Sentinels of the Multiverse, we got all of our standard archetypes out of the way. We got our speedster, and we got our gadget-using urban rogue out of the way, and we got our Superman sort of character. We got all those main archetypes done, and then those were done, and we moved on to expansions where we did more urban themes or more magic themes or more like extraterrestrial or extraplanar and stuff like that, and all the different expansions had a different feel to them. And it's great going back to now this kind of first set Sentinels of Earth Prime game, in which it's back to a lot of more standard archetypes that are more like initial launch characters, and I'm like, oh man, you know, I wrote the mechanics for these characters, for the Sentinels and Multiverse characters, in 2010. So here I am now in 2017, getting to go back over it again with a really, with like, you know, a few years of experience and having a lot of fun doing these decks. So it's been really cool. I've run into some things where I'm like, oh, there was one thing. I ran into an issue where I was building a character in a certain way, and then I ran into Chris Premis and Hal at Gamma, and Hal was showing me the cover art for the game, and he's like, oh, and this character here has got this shield, and she's going to do this with it. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that character ever did a shield thing. We should probably talk about this. I should probably write a shield into the deck and like make that an important thing. And so then like Chris and Steve and I had kind of a quick email conversation. We're like, hey, what are some of the shticks that these characters use so that I can make sure they show up in the deck and the character feels appropriate? Because I'm just kind of like, oh, because I was reading the stat blocks. I'm like, oh, these are the things they can do. I'll build a deck around that. And that worked. But I wanted to make sure that I was building the character as written, not my interpretation of that character's powers. But the track has been gotten back upon there, and life is good. So it's been a lot of fun. I like writing decks of cards that evoke a character. That you play through a deck of cards, and the way that it plays on the table, and the way the names of the cards and the mechanics on those cards make you feel like you get a feel for this character and the story of this character just from card mechanics. Like that is a fun challenge for me. It's a fun puzzle.
Has the list of first set characters been released yet?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't know that it has. I've just been naming names. Yeah. From some of the names that I named, if you really know Earth Prime well, you can probably figure out who the rest of them are.
Yeah. It'll definitely be in the Kickstarter.
Right.
Oh, good, good, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that information is going to be right up front and center right off the bat. Yeah. So.
I have to say, I've noticed one archetype you're missing.
Okay.
Which one?
You don't have any truckers with chimpanzee sidekicks.
That's true.
We don't, but we've got a biker who has... Yeah, no, I don't have a trucker with chimpanzee sidekicks.
It's all good. It's a recurring joke. It's one of the highest forms of humor. But one thing I did want to ask you about was I got a friend who's a huge fan of Sentinels. He's the guy I usually play pay with. And you guys, when you're on podcasts or doing your own stuff, own promotion, you always reference this great history of Sentinel Comics and all the various issues and annuals. And he keeps asking me, well, ever talked to these guys at the Banff podcast, ask me about, find out where their comics are.
Right.
I'm like, dude, I think there's like one or two comics that exist in PDF form online, but let me ask him and see, you know, I see you're making a face. So,
the creative team behind Sentinels the Multiverse is my good friend Adam, who I share an office with, and myself, and the two of us have created all the Sentinel story from day one. We have a podcast in which we tell all that story that we started at the beginning of this year. And in that podcast, we take questions from the audience essentially and like make an entire episode out of those questions. Because there's a lot of questions. And we actually just posted an episode of that podcast earlier today in which we had that question and we really sheepishly answered it because like, you're like, so where are all the comics that this is based on? You reference, you know, this issue and this number and this title and this one shot. Like, where are these comics? And we're like, they don't exist. Like, these comics are all stories that Adam and I have told each other for years in the privacy of our homes. And that's it. There's when we sat down to make this game in the first place, we were like, okay, I'd love to have a game that was like this. I wanted to have a card game in which I play as a superhero and I feel like a superhero when I'm playing it. I don't want to control a team of heroes. I don't want to like be playing in a superhero world that there's other stuff going on or whatever. I want to be playing a superhero in a team of superheroes fighting against an impossible villain in an environment that is a set of challenges on its own, because that's what comics are about for me. Is that struggle of like, I'm pretty powerful, but without my team, I can't possibly take this guy on, and it's only through our synergies that we have a chance. And there wasn't a game, there wasn't a card game or board game that did that for me. So we made that game, and when we were making it, we were like, oh, well, if this were a game about Marvel characters or about DC characters, I would expect these cards to have quotes on them from certain issues. So let's tell all those stories. Let's make up those stories and let's make up those issues and figure out like have a spreadsheet essentially of what thing, what storylines happen across what issues, or what issues cross over with other titles, and like where make this background, because by having this background, the game will be better, it'll be richer, it'll have a level of intentionality. And then that kind of took over our lives and ran away with us, and it made us like write this whole giant crazy story that is the entire story that Sentinels of the Multiverse is based on, from its core game through each of its expansions and to the final expansion coming out this year, which is called Oblivion, that ends the multiverse and ends the Sentinels of the Multiverse card game and the multiverse story entirely. We're telling the whole thing. When we first started, we were like, man, there's a chance we might get to do an expansion or two, but it doesn't matter. We have all this story, and it'll mean that the cards, even in the core game, reference things that'll probably never happen because there's no way we're going to get to tell the whole thing. And here we are in 2017 putting out the final product, and it's really cool. So,
in the interest of telling the full story, one of the things I would love to see is a setting for this. At least I love reading the timelines and stories of the characters. And considering you're teaming up with Green Ronin to do this card game, why not take it the extra step and have them produce a Sentinels of the Multiverse setting book?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Jacob. I guess I'll let Chris answer.
Funny. Well, during the prep for this episode, I said there's a thing that I don't think we should really bother getting into today, and yet here we are. The biggest
Jacob came on late.
So. Oh no, I asked these things.
The biggest argument against, like,
where are all the monkeys and truck drivers?
Against having Green Ronin do a setting for it is that we're making our own RPG. And so, like, as much as I love Mutants and Masterminds, because I do, because Adam and I played Mutants and Masterminds, and we have a bunch of Sentinels characters that started their comic book journey in a Mutants and Masterminds game that we played in college. We're making our own storytelling sort of RPG, and we'll be using that to tell Sentinel story. But that, even yet with that, the storyline for that takes place after the multiverse ends. The Sentinels of the Multiverse game tells the story of the multiverse. There's a big event that ends the multiverse, and that goes away, and then Sentinel Comics continues, and we tell that story with a bunch of stuff in an RPG.
I can accept this answer.
Also, there will be a book that's coming out as part of the Sentinel Comics RPG that tells, like, the history of Sentinel Comics, not just the card game, not just the stories of the characters, but the story more zoomed out of Sentinel Comics as a company. But you know, spoilers.
And if I may, two of my favorite RPG writers are going to be writing that.
And who would that be, Chris?
That would be Darren Watts and some guy that he went up to in a bar at Gen Con last year and says, "Hey, would you like to write something crazy?" And that immediately made my ears perk up.
How do you turn down an offer like that?
Yeah. So yes, Darren and I are going to be writing the fictional history of Sentinel Comics, and we have spent many a day and a night since Gen Con swapping emails about things we're going to put into this. And if people find it 1/10 as funny as we do, it's going to be a big hit, and people are going to love this.
Yeah, we actually have a big meeting coming up in a couple of days here to go over all that stuff and for me to give some marching orders in terms of here's all the stuff that has to be in it. So. Mm-hmm.
This was
a secret project we weren't supposed to talk about on the air.
That's the one. That's the secret project we weren't supposed to talk about. Like, I don't even know why.
Sorry for bringing it up. It's just I love reading superhero universe, you know, histories and seeing how all the worlds are changed and different. I've written three of them myself. One for a DC game I was planning on running. One for a Marvel game I was planning on running, and then one again for the Superpowered Legends universe that I've created.
Hey, speaking of superpowered universes, Mr. Steve Kenson, I understand that you guys at Green Ronin are going to be doing fiction that will include fiction in the Freedomverse.
That is, in fact, the plan. We are launching a new fiction line, and it's going to be for all of Green Ronin's various settings, and that does include Earth Prime. So there are some things in the works as far as that goes. And we've also got the new edition of Freedom City coming up to round out all of the third edition Earth Prime books. And that has the newly revised, speaking of timelines, you know, sort of timeline of the whole Freedom City setting that I had to condense down from originally something that was the size of a source book in and of itself to fit in a chapter of the book.
One chapter.
Yeah, just one chapter for the timeline. So the original timeline was kind of massive. The new Freedom City book is coming along. It's going to be a really, really nice looking book. Is going to really complement, Emerald City and Atlas of Earth Prime and sort of rounding out the whole setting and, you know, kind of bookending it.
That's really exciting. I'm thrilled about your fiction line. I've been seeing a lot about that, and I'm thrilled that that's happening. You guys are doing a lot of cool things with that, and going a lot of interesting directions. That, in terms of like the writers and creators and things, I'm very pleased.
So. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, too.
Do we know can we name any of the writers who are going to be working on that?
Not yet, but things are in the works.
Are any of the writers who might be considered on this podcast now?
One that would get down on his knees and beg, and you know that you know I can attest to that at least.
Are you talking about me?
I'll make that two then.
Oh, there you go. No, it wasn't me. Okay,
speaking only as a consumer, I would pay for a novelization of Time of Crisis.
Well, there you go.
I would commission my own personal.
and I'll tell you something, Dan. I would totally accept that check.
Yes, this is how this industry works, folks.
Yes,
well, we'll take a check, that's for sure.
It's a little known fact that the game industry primarily exists for us to make products that we can trade with our peers.
Icons pretty much exist so I can make products I want.
Yeah.
I mean, the multiverse exists because I wanted to play, you know, Adam and I wanted to play a game that didn't exist.
Yeah.
So. Hooray, everyone wants the stuff we like. So now you know our secrets.
Yes.
This podcast can never go on the air, Mike. Sorry. You ruined us. You ruined us all. That's why they created Hula Hoops. Somebody wanted a hula hoop.
And on that note.
Hey, is anyone reading Batman 66 and Wonder Woman 77?
Yep.
Is it good?
I've been enjoying it for the nostalgia factor.
Hey, come on, they did a crossover with the Bionic Woman. What's there not to love?
That I've been reading too, and that's been wonderful. I love in the back of each of those issues, they reference what episode certain characters appeared in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You see what the next crossover is, haven't you?
No, what is it?
It's Batman Legion Superheroes. Batman 66 and Legion.
Get out of here.
Yep. All red artwork as well, so it'll be quite interesting. Yeah.
Now that will be great. And oh, speaking of all red, man, his run on Silver Surfer has been so fun. It's been so weird and fun.
Yeah. The Hanna-Barbera DC crossovers are also pretty fun.
They are insanely good.
Right? Like,
Flintstones is ridiculous.
I mean, come on, Space Ghost and Green Lantern team up. That's like, you know, makes
me
unbelievably
happy.
Comic store didn't get them, so I've got to put a special order in for them all, which is a bit annoying. So, yeah, I want
them all. I had to hunt down all the Space Ghost Universe stuff that was in the same book.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the title's called. I've had a special order every. Yeah. Yep, I've had to special order every copy from my local
worth it. Oh, it's a fun series.
It is so good. And the art is so good too. I was like, how do you bring the Herculoids together, Johnny? Oh, there you do it. And I'm like, man, they're really good over there. Crap.
I
remember when comics were He-Man versus Superman.
I really, really wish they would someone would do an RPG with the Hanna-Barbera characters in it, and I wish they would give me the license and I could write it myself, but that's not going to happen. So Steve, there's something to percolate on, huh?
Yeah, right? So, I'm sure Spectrum Games has probably beat me to it at this point.
They filed a lot of the serial numbers off, but yes, they do have an 80s
Saturday morning cartoon.
Cartoon thing,
yeah. No, it's good. I think it's just called 80 Saturday Morning Action Hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called. But it's really good. Although I see that they kind of veered towards the Hasbro toy line cartoons, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, the afternoon action shows.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least two of those afternoon action shows are now the foundation of ridiculously profitable movie series. So I can see why they would.
Yeah.
But hey guys, I need to go and do dad stuff. I gotta pick my kid up from daycare and take him for a haircut. But it's a great pleasure having all 12 of you on the podcast today. Appreciate everyone joining up.
I appreciate no one betraying anyone else for 30 silver. That's really great.
Is that an Easter reference or what?
Yeah, man. Way to pick up on the old school Easter
too
reference.
Soon.
Spoilers.
Well, by a couple days, but come on.
Spoilers. I didn't realize. I didn't read that far in the Bible yet. I didn't know that happened. Come on, man.
I'm waiting for the movie.
They tell the same story 4 times, dude. Like... Spoilers. I like that it's like that whole, like, from different points of view, Rashomon kind of deal.
That's an interesting artistic choice. Hey, Chris, when are we going to see a reskinning of that fictional universe into Greater Than? I'm kidding, sorry.
It's called Miracle Man. Neil Gaiman wrote it.
Yeah, he did.
And he made his superheroes, so double trouble. Speaking of, oh, wait, before we go, dude, American Gods premieres this month.
Defenders is coming out soon. I loved the book American Gods so much. I'm tempted to not watch the TV show just because.
My sister has been to the past three October 31st events at House on the Rock.
I mean, that doesn't.
He's also not watching the show.
Doesn't your sister like know Neil Gaiman?
We both do actually. Yeah, because of a weird thing that we did.
we can just leave it at
that. About Preacher though.
I thought Preacher was really good. I loved it, and it's on Hulu Plus. So if you want to watch it, it's good.
Yeah. All give the way it a through try. You can always turn it off after 20 minutes, but give it a try.
Yep.
Oh, hey, speaking of things that are cool, Fighting Go Games is running Kickstarter right now called Arthur Lives for Fate Core. Yeah, you're using Fate Core to play reincarnated Arthur archetypes.
Yes, Arthur Lives. Mm-hmm. Back this thing, fools.
Yeah, we got 18 days left. We're over 60% funded. So please check us out on Kickstarter. It's a fantastic game. Jason Tundra is a great writer. And that's about all I have to say. Anybody else have any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
thanks, man. I'm glad I got to clear the air with Chris from Sentinels. Because, man, I felt bad about that review now that I read it. I was like, man, I was a punk. I should have punked out like that. I should have played more.
Yeah. Hey, if you're a Misty, watch the new Mystery Science Theater tonight and watch it often, because however many times people watch it on Netflix determines whether or not there'll be a season 12, and season 11 will very much make you want there to be a season 12.
Oh, don't worry. I'm all over that. I can't wait. Oh, and hey, Star Wars Celebrations this weekend, so all the Star Wars news will be coming out. So that's out there too for all you genre people.
What is the Star Wars?
That's this thing about the Journal of the Wills. It's this weird 70s crap.
It's an offshoot from Star Trek where there's actual fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, has a trucker with a monkey.
That is true.
Oh, God. I missed the running jokes Dan and I used to have when he was on the podcast more. That's
indeed true.
That's a perfect place to
end. Freeze, baby. That's what Rick and Morty taught me.
All right. Well, hey, guys. Thanks to everybody for joining, and we will catch you next time with the Banff Podcast.